business. Open up your podcast player, search for Podnuts, and find all kinds of content, whether it be Matt talking anything from iOS to missile silos on the MRP show, or Marvin B talking about enterprise type support, Jeff talking about computer repair and the business of computer repair, or Android or mini computers or a whole bunch of other things. That is Podnuts. Also, I want to remind people, reviews are a great way to support the show in a non-fiscal mode. I don't expect even above a 3% of listeners actually have the available funds that they are ready to donate. So there are many different ways to support the show. Amongst others are also email and feedback support. I'm not recording this show live. It's actually 10:22 in the morning. Had to take off of work today to do two kid-related things, both of them school-related. Oh, joy. Oh, joy. The fun I have. This is a show where we talk about Linux in all manner of speaking, as long as it's not about the business, because business Linux sucks. It's dull, and it's boring, and it's mundane, and it's monotonous, and it's stupid. You have people worrying about things that really don't matter, and you're having people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on hardware, thus hopefully enabling our prices to come down. The example of how I cannot stand any business computer type podcast, Patrick Norton did This Week in Computer Hardware with the guy from Kentucky who does PCPerspective.com. Both of them got guys I really like, guys who I think are really smart. And they do This Week in Computer Hardware, where they go over what's the biggest difference in the latest NVIDIA chipset and stuff. And that's the kind of stuff I just cannot sit through. It means little to nothing of me. While I am a guy who does enjoy specs of hardware, I do not enjoy going over every single little spec and every single little piece of hardware, especially when it's really nothing more than a business type thing. So this is more end user focused, more end user related. I was able to find at least a couple things I think worth talking about. First and foremost, this is going to be a link to packages.ubuntu.com. And this goes back to the trusty days, is where I was able to find at least a link. I'll see if I can find a new up-to-date one. But it's basically in Ubuntu-based distributions, especially GNOME-based ones, you have software and updates, or software update properties, sometimes it's called. This is installed, at least in the screen that I typically see, even on my Ubuntu installs, is a GTK piece of software called software-properties-GTK. This is a piece of GUI that I'm sure a lot of users have seen over the time. Typically, you just load it, do one thing, and then get right out of it. But here is a quick verbal description of what the window looks like. At the very top, it says software and updates. And then across the top, you have about six tabs labeled Ubuntu software, other software, updates, all authentication, additional drivers, and developer options. Additional drivers is, I think, the first thing that made me aware of this window back in the day, because when I had third-party video drivers or NIC drivers or modem drivers, like back in the day, you would come here to manage the actual third-party binaries you would use for like NVIDIA video cards kind of thing. I use this tab less and less and less and less as time goes on, because I do try to take the time and pay attention to what I order and not order things that require these third-party drivers. In my opinion, once you start to add drivers to this, you introduce instability into your operating system. If not instability, unplanned and possible instability is what I'll say. But that's not the tab I'm interested in. The very first tab is one that I do encourage people to go down the line, look at that, and just see available options under the Ubuntu software tab. I think it's interesting. Other software is a way you can go and remove PPAs by hand. That's another useful tab. But it's the third tab that caught my attention, that got me to look at it, that got me, to be honest, a little bit upset. I found out, like, when I'm coming downstairs, booting up the T420 ThinkPad, logging into the desktop and then booting up my like Zotac Z-Box to do podcast. That when I would sometimes come down and try to do an update, as soon as I came down, I would get inability to lock the file, which I know, you know, as soon as you boot up a Windows operating system, for instance, one of the first things it tries to do is connect Windows Update and see if is there an update that I should be quietly downloading in the background. Ubuntu and most modern Linux distributions that I know of do the very same thing, which is why sometimes if you're on a low bandwidth connection, you might want to log in and then not touch the keyboard or the mouse for like a minute or two and let it do its little initial startup task. But I swear something in this tab got changed on all my devices, or I've been completely ignorant of it the entire time. Okay. Down below the first set of checkboxes, there's a couple drop down combo boxes. And the second one down was not set to something I consider to be something me as an administrator on my network and a administrator to my devices, that I like the default option very much at all. Now, quick diversion. Gibson talked about on Security Now. He's one of the guys I think understands the basis of security on computers. And what he said was, we're getting to a point to where there are basically so many people out there who are computer illiterate. We, as the computer industry, which he is part of, have to start to initiate updates and upgrades without asking the user, because we have to or else. I definitely agree with what he says there. I definitely agree with his belief in it there. But then what I'll say is, as a user who considers himself to be at least be semi-competent, what I would appreciate is during the first installation, which I don't remember seeing, option to set this as a default. Or maybe if this did get changed post-install, to just give me a little pop-up and say, which setting would you very like to have more? Okay, here are the choices. The box in a question is called when there are security updates. And the actual choices are display immediately, download automatically, download and install automatically. And I understand, I absolutely understand why a company, an organization, a distribution would set this to download and install automatically. I get it. But I accept administrator responsibility on all my devices. I am responsible for their update. I am responsible for their upkeep. I am responsible for their monitoring. So I am responsible. But what was happening was I would be doing podcast, okay, where I need all my processors and all of my RAM and all of my network bandwidth to be dedicated towards this one task. Before or after it, I don't care. But during it, I need it for consistency in the end product. The old adage of garbage in, garbage out holds true more than ever. If I am recording something and the bandwidth incredibly spikes or the processor gets hit really hard, it can literally cause artifacts in what I'm doing. That's not good. Okay. So I opened up software-properties-gtk as root, and I go in and I change that to just say display immediately, because as an administrator, that's what I want. I want to be able to know exactly what's going on my computers, but more poignantly, I want the ability to control them and manipulate them as I see fit. Now, if I was smart, I would simply just have off hours on my devices, maintenance scripts doing checking for these security updates and the such. But I mean, I'm on a very trusted domain that I control. There are no Windows devices on my domain. I know what's going on my domain. I have traffic analysis on my domain on a independent box. So I feel comfortable in what I'm saying, that I accept responsibility to my devices. And I really don't like companies, organizations, distributions not presenting this option to at least people. Now, with that said, maybe during like the installation, they want to ask, are you a administrator or a user? Do you consider yourself computer literate and experienced and want to administer this device? Or are you a normal user just wants a web browser, just needs to do basic tasks. Now, if they asked that during the installation and I picked the second one, I would understand them making this the default. But I would like to believe Linux distributions understand now more than ever, they have a very broad range of people downloading their distribution. I'm all for protecting the users that need it. I'm all for helping the users that need it. And I'm all for making security updates default to install. That to me is a very smart thing, but not on my computers. Kind of like the George Carlin Nimba, not in my backyard. People would say, you know, let's build more prisons, but don't build it too close to my house. It is kind of like that. I understand how I am a hypocrite. I'm in America. So, you know, that kind of goes without saying. I'm a hypocrite to at least some degree. Best Linux apps 2018. We got another one here, people. Tech Radar 2018 ain't even over yet. Maybe something could come out. Or maybe they're just going to regurgitate the exact same stuff that everybody else is doing, because once again, I'll say the Linux desktop is now officially boring. Best Linux apps 2018 by Nate, September 12th, 2018. Nate, thank you for trying to make content, but okay. Number one, Synaptic. Excuse me? Pardon me? Synaptic? That at least came out of left field, at least is what I'll say. And I do like Synaptic, but I'm pretty sure it really hasn't changed in like 7 years, maybe more. It's been a long time. Number two, VLC Media Player again. Okay. Number three, Firefox. Sounds familiar. Like this is almost identical. Number four, GIMP. Yeah, go with that. Number five, Deluge. That is a very good alternative to BitTorrent downloading. I have used Transmission. I have used Deluge. It's fine. I'm not going to say the best. Number six, Thunderbird. Why? Of course. The other list had Evolution. So now let's just have something that's opposite. LibreOffice. Sure. Pigeon. Pigeon. They literally put Pigeon on the list. And Pigeon's great. I love Pigeon. It works exactly as advertised. You have a lot of control over it. It is good for accessibility, or at least it used to be good for accessibility. You could even connect to things like Skype. But the best of 2018, and then okay, number nine, Clam AV, Clam TK. Does nobody in any realm, and I really don't want to sound stupid. I know there's plenty of stuff I don't know. There's a lot I don't know. But what I do know is Clam AV is Linux installable on your system. The only thing it really looks for on your Linux system is rootkits, because that's really all there is on Linux systems on, you know, the end of November 2018. There's no viruses. Yes, there has been viruses, but there's no viruses out in the wild. There's just possibility of getting rootkit infected. And Clam AV, Clam TK are basically looking for Windows infections and stopping them before they get on Windows computers. That's the huge percentage of what Clam AV, Clam TK does. So to call it a Linux application of the year for protecting Windows users, it's kind of like glorifying putting pads everywhere on somebody when they're just walking down the street. I find it incredibly unnecessary. Nobody should have this on their desktop, especially. No one should ever have ClamV on their desktop. If you want to have it on a server environment, once again, we get back to that snoring, boring stuff. If you want to have it on a server in a business, in a closet, scanning stuff as it crosses over your network, that's acceptable. That's a very good use case, because you want to protect the entire ecosystem, because you don't have complete control over everything because you're in a non-trusted environment with end users. I'm here at home. Most people are at their homes. Most people would never see anything ever pop up on Clam AV, Clam TK. That's really important. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Number 10, Audacity. Apparently these are the best kinds of applications that these journalists apparently can find, is what it seems like. And that's not good for you. That's not good for me. That's not healthy for Linux as far as end users are concerned. The really quick diversion is, I've said this on my other show, DDG, and if you want to listen to something that you won't like, I don't think anybody likes that show. I'm not sure I like the show, but DDG, I kept saying perspective is reality. Okay. There is no best of something. There's just your perspective on what it is that makes something important, good, bad, or indifferent. And here's the example I use, like software and hardware. I am looking at this as an end user. I've made no qualms about that. I'm not a developer. I have developed in the past. I've developed stuff in the past that's still running 20 years later on enterprise hardware with no issues. You know, it's a miracle. But I'm not a developer. I was an administrator, a domain administrator for years. I'm not talking as a domain administrator. I'm talking as a normal guy, a parent, a father, a husband. I can't believe, you know, but I am that. Hey, I am. Somebody said, yes, wow. But I'm talking as an end user, as a normal person's viewpoint. So when I say the GPL is good and the MIT license isn't as good, I'm not going to say it's bad. It isn't as good. It's because those things are not as good to end users. I want end users to have the power. I want end users to have the rights. I want end users to be able to control what they access, when they access, how they access. Now, businesses, if I owned a business, I would probably like the MIT license much more, Apache license much more. But I'm not. I'm a user. Like most of the people who probably download this show are users. Now, I can take myself out of my end user role when I go to work and I'm making decisions based upon my job. I'm not looking for end users to be protected, for end users to get what they want. I'm looking for the administration to get what they want. I'm looking for our business units to get what we want, kind of thing. So when I see these best Linux apps 2018, it literally just makes me sad. I'm not going to say it puts me into depression, but it doesn't help at all. These lists are horrible. These apps suck. Most of them that I've seen come out new aren't very interesting, exciting, or anything else. But I have another tangent to go on to, because that's apparently what this show is going to be called. Tangents, tangents, and more tangents. I've heard a whole lot of people in the last 2 years mention Deepin, D-E-E-P-I-N, Deepin Linux, and just go right off the handle about how they're pure evil, they're bad, they're stealing your data, they're sending it to the Chinese government, they want to kill all humans. I mean, you can just keep going on and on and on, and it seems like nobody bats an eye. There's too many people out there that believe, here's the biggest word, believe Deepin is somehow evil, sending your information directly to the Chinese government. And the most popular thing I'll say that gets me upset is when they say spyware. It has spyware on it. It is like filled with spyware, like packed with spyware. It's like ridiculous. It is literally ridiculous what these people say. Okay. Here's why I say it. Because I am not completely incompetent. I don't think that I'm smarter than anybody else. I don't assume things without at least some tangible evidence. The smartest people in the world don't think they're the smartest people in the world. The people who think they're the smartest people in the world are the biggest idiots I've ever met. Here's a perfect example of stupidity. If I say in a room, the stupidest people I've ever met have college degrees, every single person with a college degree will take it as a personal insult. Do they not understand? Do they not realize? Do they not think that there's a lot more college graduates than just them? There's a lot more types of college graduates than just them. There's a lot of college graduates that just drank their way and partied their way through school and then just fell out the other side and now are just as stupid as everyone else, just trying to get by. But no, they think it's a personal insult on them. The stupidest people I've ever met in my life are in Mensa. And I've met at least now 30 people who are in Mensa, and they are among the stupidest people I've ever met in my life because they assume so much. They swear that they're so damn smart, and they're not. They take a lot of things for granted without a bit of research, without a bit of evidence, without a bit of facts. And here's the example. Deepin. I installed Deepin on real physical hardware over 2 years ago. I let it sit on my network for 3 months. I captured every packet that was coming off that port, every single damn packet that was coming off that port. I would log in once a week. I would do updates. I would make sure it did updates. And then I would do a little bit of browsing, do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that. What I did was very regimented. It was very exact. It was very documented what I was doing. And then I went back and I basically watched YouTube videos on how to, you know, analyze the packets and see what was going on. And I used tools like Wireshark, and I took it and I exported it to Gedit and the Notepad QQ. And I did some manipulation to the text to make it easier to digest and actually put it into a database and did some analysis on it. And there's nothing going on in this damn distribution any different than any other distribution I've ever installed. Ever. Now, here's the thing. Am I stupid? Well, yeah, I could be. Do I believe that there's spyware purposely inserted into Deepin? Well, let's get into some definitions now. Do I think that there's spyware put in Ubuntu where its intent is to help Mark Shuttleworth and Ubuntu do stuff? Well, yeah, I think that's probably probable what they do. Then I'll stop and say, do I think that there's stuff inside of Windows or Mac OS that directly benefits Redmond or Cupertino or whatever the hell it is, or and maybe even the U.S. federal government? Well, yeah, but I'm not sure I would call it spyware. It wouldn't shock me if there's a connection going on there. It wouldn't shock me if there is a actual legitimate traceable connection there. Is it direct? Is it stealing your data? I don't think so. Is it like worming its way through your computer and looking for things? I highly doubt that. Do I think Deepin has spyware on it to the same degree as Windows, as Mac OS X, as Ubuntu, as any other distribution except for maybe Slackware? Yeah, it probably is. Do I think that the Chinese government has direct connections inside Deepin? Why would they? They don't care. They have bigger fish to fry. Let's be realistic now. Could a comet come through my roof? Yes. Am I going to go crazy screaming about a comet coming through my roof? No. Am I going to use analysis and see how many comets are falling around me and then do a intelligent determination? Yes. I analyzed Deepin. I can't find anybody who analyzed Deepin and actually found anything. It's just like these mental invalids screaming about Chinese phones can't be in the U.S. because terrorist, because communism, because evil. These people are absolute idiots. They don't understand how anything works. There's never been a single recorded case that I can find of somebody taking these phones, setting the phone in front of them, connecting it to whatever service, capturing any packets, and finding anything malicious in any of them. Any of them. Am I saying it's possible? Of course it is. Of course it is. I'm not stupid. But is it happening? No. Is it likely to happen? I don't know. But, you know, it hasn't happened. Same thing with Deepin. I can't find anybody who's found anything of any actual evidence. And the only videos I was able to find, it was very obvious they were emotionally charged. And when they did find something, they went crazy and they started making all kinds of assumptions, almost sounding like flat earth people, okay? What was being sent back to Deepin is the exact same kind of content in the exact same format that Ubuntu sends back to its servers, or Linux Mint sends back to its servers, or OpenSUSE sends back to its servers, or Windows sends back to its servers, or Mac sends back to its servers. There's nothing different. Actually look into it, people. And if I'm wrong, send me the evidence that I'm wrong. Send me the proof that I'm wrong. Don't send me some mental invalid screaming about how they're spying on us, they're spying on us, they're spying on us, and then pointing at it saying, see, like a flat earther does. See, you know, no, I need actual like packet captures. I need to see transmissions of data kind of thing. If you want me to believe that, or do a code analysis on the direct MD5 certified ISO from their official repo, and then find me spyware on that ISO. Do it. Prove me wrong. Say I'm an idiot. Prove me wrong. Until then, people need to stop spreading FUD or do your due diligence and keep your mouth shut until you actually have an idea of what you're talking about. I'm hearing it way too much from way too many people. We need to stop demonizing everybody who's not in our tribe. It's disgusting. It's despicable. It's deplorable. There's 3 D's for you, okay, for Deepin. So why don't you check it out? Download it. If you're scared, isolate the network. Open up your virtual box, open up your virtual thing, isolate the network, and then install it and do your own analysis. Use your brain, okay? We have it there for a reason, not just to help with balance. Now, I really do hope in like a week or two, somebody proves that Deepin does have spyware on it, and I will come back and I will say how wrong I am. But I looked, I know I couldn't find anything. Everybody else who I know, who I trust, who I asked to look, found nothing. And I don't see anybody else out there finding and proving anything. So somebody out there prove me wrong or communicate with people who are spreading that FUD. And honestly, I say call them out as they should be. They're spreading FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Now it's my turn to spread some fear, certainty, and doubt. But oh, wait, okay. Here's the first two paragraphs from the Deepin Wikipedia page, which I'm going to leave in the notes. Okay. Deepin, a stylized as Deppin, formerly known as Linux Deepin and Highweed Linux, I believe it's pronounced, is an open source operating system for computers. It is a Linux distribution based on Debian's unstable branch. It runs on personal computers and network servers. Deepin runs on x86-64 architectures. New paragraph. Development of Deepin is led by China-based Wuhan Deepin Technology Company LTD that generates revenue through the sale and technical support and other services related to Deepin. As of 2017, Deepin is the most popular Linux distribution organization from China, according to DistroWatch. And that's it. Okay, so you can say China's putting spyware in Deepin, and I'll get to say the South African government is putting spyware in Ubuntu, and I'll say the United States is putting spyware into Windows, and then I'll say Ireland is putting spyware into Linux Mint, because it's the same basic things that are going on in the background until someone again proves me wrong. And it's not difficult. I prove myself wrong all the time. Okay, now we're going to get to the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I loved this article because it literally came out at the exact same time I was thinking, what's going on here? We have Red Hat being sold for insane money. $34 billion. Okay. Now, as a business, this is why I like Debian probably most of all, because they're controlled, manipulated, organized, and directed by a community, not a company, not an enterprise, you know, none of them, by a community. Okay. Nothing else in the Linux world is, except for maybe Slackware. Slackware is like the Mongols. They're just out there. Okay. Here's the article from ZDNet. And I do believe it might be Stevie J. Von Nichols. I mean, if it is, the article itself should get more clicks. And it is. So the article should get more clicks. Okay, here is what the title of the article is. Mark Shuttleworth is not selling Canonical Ubuntu yet. Okay, here is all that matters. Canonical is a business. Mark Shuttleworth is a businessman. I'm going to harken back to the GNU World Order. And yeah, I said it again. GNU World Order, Klaatu, good stuff. He referenced an article written by John Mad Dog Hall. Okay, here is the gist, the juiced, the essence of that article, what it was trying to push to you. And that is Mark Shuttleworth is a businessman. First and foremost, priority number one to the shareholder, to the bottom line, to the bank account. Number one, nothing else is more important. Okay. Canonical, Ubuntu, business and product. Okay. Mark will never be able to say, I'm not selling Canonical or Ubuntu, because if he does, then he's being incredibly disingenuous. That was the best I could pronounce that, by the way. Disingenuous. I believe Mark wants to make everlasting impacts in World Wide Web, in servers, in internet. He would have liked to make a dent in phones and in tablets. He honestly thinks that he has something that he believes is going to be world changing to at least some degree. And in some ways, he, you know, they already have changed the world. That's the truth. But he has to be beholden to the bottom line. So hypothetically, he takes his business plan, he unrolls the paper, he does all the math and he figures it out. You know, if everything works perfect in 20 years, he'll be a 2.5 billion year company or something. You know, they always have plans like that. That's why they're successful business people and I'm not. Okay. You know, he has an idea of what can happen. And if somebody turns around and says, well, I'll give you $20 billion, you give me the lion's share of the profit sharing, and you will still maintain X control, Y control, and Z control kind of thing. And if he says no, then he can be held liable because he's not doing what's in the best interest of the company, hypothetically. But that could happen tomorrow. So he can't say he's never selling Ubuntu or Canonical. He can say what his intention is, what his goals are, what he would like to see happen. I'll say this, whether or not Ubuntu gets sold to me is almost irrelevant. Hey man, I didn't think I'd say that, but I just did. It's almost irrelevant if Canonical gets sold or not, as long as they maintain expectations is what I'm going to say. That's the best way I can put it. Manage expectations in the right way and just, you know, keep doing what they're doing in the same fashion. And it looks like, as I look in my monitor, an edge of a 3D print is coming off the bed, which is really annoying, but I'll check that later. You know, he has to do what's right by the company, but as long as he remains the stable go-to operating system, I'm okay. And I can't believe I don't have this link in here. Something must have happened with my link catcher utility thing. But Ubuntu announced like days before this, I believe it was, that Ubuntu GNU Linux 1804, I believe I'm more precisely, is going to have 10 years of support. 10 now. No, okay. Let's all first just slow down and say, we don't know what kind of support because, you know, he's a business guy and he, you know, keeps things, you know, vague is what I'm going to say because he don't want to promise too much. So let's just keep it vague. We don't know if this is free. I don't think that was stated or not. We don't know the level of support because there's actually two grades, two types of support you can get from Linux distributions. They're typically split up in feature type updates, whether it's an update to just an application getting installed or going through a big revision, or is it going to be security updates? And we don't know, is this going to cost money? Here's what I find honestly the most hysterical. This has been announced for well over a week now. But if you open up your web browser and go to wiki.ubuntu.com/releases, what you will see is they haven't updated their wiki. It basically says 1804 is the one that's going to have 10 years worth of support, aka it's going to have support up through April 2028. It was released on July 16th, 2018. It's going to have support until April 2028, and their wiki hasn't updated anything. Okay, I'm not just going to talk to people and say they're going to do a 10-year cycle, blah, 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 and then you know, just read some other journalist words. What I'm going to say is they haven't even updated the wiki yet. Okay, as a consumer, this makes me at least slightly worried of, A, do they not realize it's listed under wiki.ubuntu.com/releases? Do they care? Do they want to wait till they have more information? Has it not trickled down the chain yet? Or is it really undecided what they're going to support for 10 years? And that's the thing. I don't know. But I don't like the fact that they haven't even updated their page yet. But I really do hope I'll be able to have this thing installed for 10 years with stability. All I crave in my Linux ecosystems is stability. I have software. I have the ability to break any operating system anytime I want. I have that power. But if it can remain stable, then I will be very happy. 10 years of support, that means a lot to infrastructure people. That means a lot to big iron server people. This means a lot to IoT type people. So hopefully Ubuntu will be able to make more inroads in those boring business use cases. But I really want them to be stable on my desktop. Okay, next thing I'm going to bring up here really quick is, what I'm going to say is, I have very, 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 very mixed feelings about this. You thought I was confusing myself with the previous links. This one confuses me a little bit more because I'm not sure exactly how to feel about it. But the link is over to Beta News, and it's called, the title of it is Microsoft is porting sysinternals utilities to Linux, starting with proc dump. Yeah, and the gimmick is, here's why I have such mixed feelings about this, anytime Microsoft does anything on the Linux platform, I have to believe it's to try to support their future money, try to support their lock-in, try to suck people in, extend, embrace, extinguish, to try to just guarantee future money somehow. I like seeing other tools come to the Linux platform just to remind me that Linux does have some chutzpah. Linux does have some push. People want their things on Linux. So, you know, that really does make me feel better. It really does. Sysinternals, though, is a very special, in a good way, special piece of software. Okay, Sysinternals is a suite of tools that, if you actually go back and look at the history of it, were classified basically dangerous by Microsoft, because they were really, really powerful tools that showed you a lot of information that Microsoft wasn't even sure people could get. Okay, Sysinternals was created by two people, Bryce Cogswell, I believe is his name, and the other one is Mark Rusinovich. And you should know the name Mark Rusinovich, okay? If you don't know the name Mark Rusinovich, let me first introduce you to Grace Hopper. Go for about 20 hours reading Grace Hopper stuff, watching Grace Hopper stuff, listening to Grace Hopper stuff, about 20 hours worth, and then go start listening to some Mark Rusinovich stuff. And then you'll find out they're a lot alike. And what I mean is they're both geniuses with a extremely good ability to understand the most basic things and to sometimes bring those basic things across in very usable fashion. And I know that was vague, but that's the way Mark Rusinovich is. He is uncommonly smart. Okay. Microsoft hired him because he was so dangerous. As much information as this guy knew, as much as the information as this guy could find out, as much information as this guy could get into, in today's market, he would be making lots of money from exploits because, you know, what he was digging for were ways to understand more, which of course would just open the door to exploits, and exploits are worth money these days. So that's what he would be doing these days. But he's making a lot more money. Microsoft basically gave him a choice he couldn't refuse in the old mafia type fashion. Here is a big stack of money. Come work for us. Not only will they give him money and have gave him money, but they've given him and sometimes unfettered control, where he gets to do whatever the hell he wants and control people however the hell he wants. He wants to do cool tech stuff. So he's been very successful in Sysinternals, very successful at WinInternals, and even more successful at Microsoft. Azure is his offspring, okay? He is the guy who is making Azure work when it works, okay? It's him. That's not easy, okay? But Microsoft porting these Sysinternal tools to Linux is just another example to me of how they put code into the Linux kernel, but it was really just to make Azure and Linux work better together. You know, their hypervisor work a little bit better. That's really all it was. And, you know, they have the right to do that. Is it good? I don't know. Is it bad? Probably not. So, you know, they did what they did. I didn't like it. I wasn't a fan of it. But, you know, there's a lot worse things that could have happened. Now, Sysinternal tools coming to Linux, they're going to open up a certain basically tool set to Linux. But what it really the goal is to make the Windows administrator more comfortable in managing Linux headless servers and boxes and stuff like that. So I don't even know if it can be successful. I don't know if the Windows Sysinternal tool set would make sense even on Linux desktops. The brain hurts when I try to think about it, but it's happening. If you're a Windows administrator, or you know of a Windows administrator who's a fan of the WinInternals, Sysinternal tools, well, then they might be able to make a shift to managing Linux a little bit better. Okay, next thing is a Tim Berners-Lee thing, and I don't even know how to explain this. Solid, S-O-L-I-D, is a new decentralized web platform. Yes, it's like you're watching an HBO comedy about tech. Yes. Okay. Solid.inrupt.com. Solid.inrupt.com. Solid was created by the inventor of the World Wide Web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Its mission is to reshape the web as we know it. Solid will foster a new breed of applications with capabilities above and beyond anything that exists today. Oh my goodness, they must have got some marketing guy to type that up. That hurts my head. What the hell is that even supposed to mean? I don't know. But you can click Get a Solid Pod and Identity, and you can basically create one right now. And I went and I did, and I don't really understand what the hell it is. It seems to be a RESTful API interface to basic spreadsheeting, databasing type of thing. I guess it's nothing without the other code on top of it to make it useful, is what I'm guessing. I don't know. I'm really confused. I literally got a pod, and apparently it went right through me and came out the other side, because I don't know what the hell this is. But it's Tim Berners-Lee. I'm going to keep it in my radar. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Linux capable because it's running on a web server. So yeah, interesting, I guess. I don't know. Last one's going to be, I'm going to take two of these links out of the notes. So let me just come down and highlight them because I'm not going to get to them today. Okay, the three next ones are basically search type tools. Yes, I know you can type find. Yes, I know you can type locate. Yes, I know you can type sed and awk and all these things and grep and everything else. Yes, I know that. I'm not stupid. Okay, maybe I am stupid. Let's go back to that again. But I really do appreciate a good GUI search tool. I'm sorry. It just makes it easier sometimes for me to multitask, open it up, drop something in, do a search, and share the results with somebody in a quicker fashion to let them see what I see, kind of. So I am a fan of GUI searches. Now, there's three tools in here. The one is one that I used and have used. And then there's two other ones that I have not had a chance to really play with, but I love at least more choices. Choices are good. The first one is Catfish. I'm pretty sure you guys have at least experienced Catfish in the past. Sometimes it's named other things. Sometimes it's integrated in with other tools. But there's nothing crazily fancy about the tool, is the way that I'll say it. But it is a very good, solid, thin, basic search tool to where you can just search for hidden files, search for files containing, exact match, pick what folder you're searching in, wildcard searchable, date searchable, blah, 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 blah. Hit enter. There you go. I do believe this does use the update DB on the backend database to do its searches. So it is not slow. It is not crazy fast, but it is not slow, is what I'll say. And it's literally just called Catfish. You can literally just go into your distribution, do a search for Catfish, and I guarantee you can find it and install it if you want to see what it looks like. The next one looks like it might be actually a little bit more thin, a little bit quicker, maybe a little bit snappier. This is over again at maketecheasier.com, and it's called F-Search. And it says how to use F-Search to quickly search files in Linux. The one thing I do like about this site in comparison is it gives you instructions in Ubuntu, how to install it, Debian, how to install it, Arch, how to install it, Fedora, how to install it. And it does go through your first time running it to where you can add the actual database to it so it can do its searches. And it is searching file system and everything else. So this is a one that I think I'm going to install in a VM just to see how it works. It might be better than Catfish for me. I don't know, but I'm going to try to find some time to check it out. And the last one is at techmint.com, which I will say, man, this is one of those sites that literally seem to go ad crazy. Literally, like at any point in time, you literally might have 6 or 7 ads on your screen at the same time. And that's before you scroll. But this one's called FZF, a quick fuzzy file search tool from Linux. This one caught my eye just because of its looks like simplicity and speed of basically how it works. It does have plugins also to Vim and NeoVim. So if you're a Vim user, right there built into the interface, you can basically just hit a hotkey and do file type searching on your system or connected system. So the FZF might be the perfect search tool, especially if you're a Vim user, is what I'll say. Yeah, and then when you have it just installed, it's basically a command line interface. I will say there are definite times I'm perfectly okay with using a extra tool on the command line just for speed sake and because I know it's going to use less resources. So this is one I'm tempted to install, but not on a normal device, on more of a Pi type device, a Raspberry Pi, a Nano Pi, a Odroid, something to that effect. And if you want to know more about them, Mini PC Show over at podnuts.com is the one where we go into a lot of detail about a lot of that stuff. I cannot believe it, but I've literally been going, it looks like 52 minutes. I want to thank everyone for their support. And you notice how you didn't have to stop and hear a single ad. Really, you heard some rants, you heard some tantrums, you heard some tangents, but you didn't hear any unpassionate ads about things. And I want to thank everyone for their support. You guys enable me to do content, do shows, do a website, do email, and not stress about everything else that has to come with it. I also want to thank guys like Paco, Jeff, and Marvin. Those guys in particularly want to support the network by having ads on their shows when they can. So they go out of their way. They help with advertisers. They support each other greatly. They get advertisers on their shows. I try to give them back as much as I possibly can before, you know, I'm in the hole because of taxes. So I want to thank them for their support. That's how they support the network. You can support the network in any way you see fit, whether it be a review, an email, a voicemail, or just a communication. I definitely did have at least one or two emails here, but in typical fashion, I'm going to blame the fact that it's now 11:13 in the morning on Tuesday morning. So I can't just, you know, organize as well. And that's my excuse. I want to thank everyone again for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. And do not forget the most important thing until next week. If you do not have root, you do not know who God is.